You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sassman Securities in Johannesburg. David, my theme of the week, and maybe for the next couple of weeks actually, is the second wave. And I don't know if it's the second wave of the coronavirus, because I still think we're at the tail end of the first wave, which is wagging its tail again, and it's a big wag as well in the United States of America, certainly in the South and the West and the Midwest, or if it's the second wave of volatility, the second wave of market selling. But I'm just getting a sense that after a hiatus, which was a spectacular hiatus, in other words, markets going up beautifully, maybe now people are going to sit down and say, wait a second, it's the second half of the year, the second wave may be coming.
I felt uncomfortable for a couple of weeks already that we'd rushed up, and I wasn't quite sure what was going to take us into the second half or beyond the second half. There's still a lot to go through, you know, put it that way. And until such time as we get clear line of sight to the end, you know, we can actually see the end, and that will only come with a vaccine, or certainly with some drug that's going to ease the pain and, cure a lot of people with the disease. I think until then, it's going to be a very difficult time. And I think all that's happened is that by unlocking economies a little too soon, we've seen the consequences. It does spread.
Yes.
And, you know, people haven't taken it seriously. I think for the first time, they started to take it seriously, you know, especially amongst the younger people. It's exposed. For me, the one thing it's exposed is just how badly prepared the world is and how we're lacking in a world leader. We've spoken about this many, many times before, but when you think about it, when you think about where we are, you're saying, what's disjointed. It's so, every approach is different. There's no coordinated, coherent approach to where we are at the moment in everything, not only in addressing the disease, but also in the economic economic solution as well. So we're all over. You can't join the dots, you know. This is a three-dimensional kind of Rubik cube or whatever it is. I don't know. It's very, very difficult to try and sort this one out.
Well, we have to sit
and I think
yes, we have to talk about the United States when you say there's a disjointed approach to the approach. And the United States of America is suddenly, well, not suddenly, actually, it's been going on for weeks now. It has the most cases. It has the highest infection rate. And it suddenly, from, as they call it, flattening the curve, to the curve starting to spike up again. I mean, this is a technical analyst dream, this thing, because it's broken out of a falling wedge and all that sort of thing. It's amazing what's going on. And I do believe that Mr. Trump is unraveling a little bit, and that will ultimately lead to his demise, and will also lead to the demise of the stock market because of his loose policies. I don't know. I just see November.
I can't.
Being awful for the markets.
Second part. I don't know that second part. That I can't. I don't know where we're going. You know what I'm saying? It genuinely. I don't feel the selling pressure. I don't feel it. I think there's, and that's not. That's not because of anything other than you've got interest rates at zero, and that provides some kind of a support base. We're going to see results coming through. There are issues happening all the time. Like you're seeing the reaction to Facebook simply because they wouldn't address hate speech. You know, they wouldn't address very important issues. So they said that it's free speech, it's interfering with free speech, but the advertisers are saying no, you know, and have taken a different view because of the proliferation of all this divisive content on, you know, on Facebook pages. So you're starting to see, people respond in different ways. So those are issues, you know, don't ignore them. And I think this is all building up to a very difficult couple of months, which is going to be politically motivated. But at the back of it, you've got this pandemic as well. So there's so many cross currents, Lindsay, that it's it's hard to make a decision where to go. Would I go all into the market at the moment? Definitely not. You know, that's what I'm saying to you.
Yes.
I'm a bull. Would I start buying on little dips there? No, not yet. You know, that's my view. Where's it going to go? Is it going to go to March 23rd? Is it going to be all that way down? No, I don't know. You know, I unless they come out with something, unless there's some kind of breaking news upwards, you know, positive news, I think we're just going to bumble along in, you know, volatile. So I don't know whether that fits into your description, you know, when you what kind of market you're seeing, whether you're going to see a major sell-off again.
No, I was talking about when it comes up to the election time, when it becomes apparent, if indeed it does, when it becomes apparent that Mr. Trump is going to be out because he's sort of unraveling both physically and mentally and politically. He really is, because he put out a tweet yesterday. He retweeted a tweet where a chap was pumping his fist and shouted white power. And he retweeted that.
He's lost
it. And he left it up for 3 hours. Surely he has an entourage of people around him.
He's lost it.
A social media entourage that says, no, wait a second, we've just listened to that. We've got to get it down. No, he left it up for 3 hours. And I believe, and I firmly believe, it was deliberate. And he's trying to play to his white base. And he thinks that'll get him through. Or, on the other hand, he could be going so mad that he doesn't want to be re-elected. I can't work it out. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. There might be a death wish. You know, there might be a death wish. Well, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out with all the anger, you know, that I would like to express. I'm going to let them have it. You know, that kind of attitude. I'm going to really let them have it. Because what it does do is it exposes his frailties or his weaknesses. And you know, he's not trying to bring the nation together, and I think that's where markets are just so utterly confused at the moment. They're crying out, or America's crying out for someone to take the lead, you know, someone to coordinate an effort, and all it's done is being left to individual governors to try, or even districts, to try and sort this out. And you can't do it of this, you know, something of this magnitude. And even the world's at a loose end. You know, no one in the world really, I'm talking Europe and the UK and those areas, there's no, if anything, they're slightly better than in America. But America is just pointing in so many different directions. So against that, it's very difficult to get the kind of confidence that we need to boost markets and to get them over this hump. It's very, it's very uncertain and difficult. And that's where we're playing. That's the kind of field we're playing on. You know, you're baffled. You're baffled by every tweet you see. You say, I don't believe this. You know, this is the so-called leader of the free. He has no idea. Absolutely no idea.
Nothing.
And it's also come through in his interviews. You know, where he's got no ideas for a second term. There was, I think we spoke about it the other week, maybe, I think, where was the, you know, he was on Fox or something, and they asked him about a second term, and he said, oh, I'm just learning to cope with, you know, I knew no one in
there was a very rambling, incoherent answer. Yes, I saw that. It was incredible. It was about one page long. I read it, and I thought, he's managed to say nothing.
Exactly.
I think that sums him up, really, that one page of notes. And he has the audacity and the temerity to say that Joe Biden is a low IQ individual. Sleepy Joe, corrupt Joe now, sleepy and corrupt Joe Biden is a low IQ person. I don't think he's low IQ compared to Donald Trump. I do think, though, he will also be a weak president. So America's got no leadership. There's no one at the tiller. I'm sorry. It's very, very disturbing.
The Wall Street Journal picked it up. Now, the Wall Street Journal is actually a Fox publication. It's Murdoch. So they tend to be very conservative. But they had an op-ed as well that said exactly what you're saying now. You know, he has just rambles on with no coherent message of what he's going to do should he be reelected. And I know we discuss politics, but it's starting to filter through to the to the economy. If Joe Biden takes over, you know, or is elected when the Democrats are elected, I also think there might be a bit of relief, but I'm not sure how markets are going to respond or react. At the moment, we're just drifting. We're in no man's land.
Yeah, I suppose he can delegate. I mean, let's hope. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, he's a better delegator than Mr. Trump is and has been. Because Mr. Trump, as soon as someone doesn't like anything he says, he sacks the person, male, female, media representative, defense secretary, whatever it is. They get clobbered immediately. I don't think Joe Biden will be the same. Just surround yourself with clever people and sit there and smile and shake a few hands. That's all the President of the United States does, in my opinion.
President Reagan did that.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
Reagan did that. He was in bed at 8 o'clock. You know, I don't think he took life too seriously. He was, you know.
Like you.
TV and,
very similar to you.
Exactly.
You are the Ronald Reagan of the asset management industry. Let's have a look at the South African market today. Adcorp, up 12.7% today. They came up with their results. Is that a company you follow?
I used to follow it in the olden days, you know, when we used to pay quite a lot of attention to some of the small up-and-coming companies.
Mm.
You know, they were brokers, they were placement agencies, and they had a very good business that, you know, on the labor front, and somehow I've lost interest in them, just maybe because they've been all over the place as well. But it was, at one stage, I did follow them quite closely.
It's very South African, though, isn't it? And you don't really like that at the moment. I mean, let's be honest.
No, not at all.
No, exactly.
No, I think we've got big troubles ahead. And it's very hard to operate in an environment where, you know, where the economy is contracting. And more so than other global economies, you know, which are coming off a much higher base. But we've got lots of trouble. We also lack leadership. You know, there's no real plan here. I mean, last week was just a fiasco when you try to work out, you know, where we go from here.
Do you think so? Do you think that? Because I've seen a lot of negative comments suddenly. I mean, after the budget, of the supplementary budget, whatever you want to call it, people said that was good, that was the best he could do. But now people are coming out and saying, no, you're not going to be able to deliver on this. Your statistics are wrong. What do you make of it? You've obviously done a lot of reading over the weekend.
You know, the problem is that you need a plan, and you need you can't. If ever you've processed a computer, you know, if ever you've programmed, the computer is not clever. It's only what you put into the computer that's clever. In other words, the instruction or the recipe that you put in. And we need a recipe. In other words, we need rules to follow to get us out of it. And at the moment, there are no rules. There's nothing. There is no coherent plan. You know, we're just bumbling along. I know Tito knows what has to be done.
Yes.
And he knows that there isn't any money. So he says the best thing we can do is just cut the expenditure. You know, in other words, chop the expenditure. But there he comes up against the unions, and he comes up against a whole lot of political you know, issues or walls that he's not going to penetrate. So I think he knows what he needs to do, but I don't know if they've got the political will to get through. Also, you need intelligence. When by intelligence, you need energy. You need drive. You need the right kind of people. People who are not driven. They're driven because they want the country to succeed, not because they got to those positions because they knew that they could fill their boots with stolen goods, you know, by getting there. So you need that almost, you know, conscious type person, a person who really wants to make South Africa great again. You know, I think Trump took this on, you know, Trump took America on just as a sport, but we need proper civil servants. What do you call them? Proper administrators, people who love doing it.
Yes.
You know, who love the job and work 24 hours a day. I don't think Cyril and his cabinet are into it. I don't think they really committed, you know, to it. I think they felt it was quite a good thing to do when they were young, because it allowed them to express their anxieties and you know, their behavior against a very corrupt regime at that stage. But now to run a country is something else. You know, you're not letting off bombs or going on protest march. You actually have to make sure that the roads work, you know, and that water flows in the pipes. And that's boring stuff. And I mean, that's awful stuff. That's admin.
Yes.
That's filling out forms. You know, people don't want to do that stuff. And you need a special personality who does it. I don't think we've got them. I don't think we've got those leaders.
I don't think so either. Anyway, you've been in the business for what, 55, 60 years? 55 years.
I've been on the market since 72. So it's 48 years. Yeah. Nearly 49 years.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's call it 50 years. Okay, 5 years.
Yeah, okay. You can round it up.
You're coming up for your half century. We know that. Now, every time that you'll have been speaking over the years, you will have come up with some sort of scandal. And you think to yourself, this is the last time that this would happen. But now the Wirecard scandal. Tell me about that. Isn't it extraordinary that it still happens?
It's absolutely incredible, because what happens, these are false entries. In other words, this is Madoff. You know, I'm giving you others. I can't remember. In the late 80s, we had a company as well, which was, I think, a textile company or something. The books were so perfect that the auditors didn't even audit it, because everything balanced. And the whole thing was a fabrication. The whole company got a listing on the JSE. It was an absolute fabrication. Every entry that went through was fabricated. There was nothing there. It was a tut, a tutorial. And it got through and listed and found shareholders, etc. It got audit reports, and I'm just fascinated, because no one ever bothered to, you know, I don't want to go through auditing procedures, but no one ever bothered to circulate any of the debtors or creditors, because they always paid on time. You know, everything was perfect. Now, this is one of these businesses, and it happens all the time, that it's bypassed. To an extent, when you do an audit, you know, that's why there's got to be a complete distance between the auditors and the company. There mustn't be a friendship. You mustn't get it, because you've got to have people who are ruthless and ask questions. And the problem with auditing is that most of the groundwork is done by clerks, you know, who are doing their first year, second year, third year, whatever it is. They know nothing. You know, so people don't ask questions, and they don't delve, and they don't get into the guts and heart of the company. They don't ask the right questions. They don't go to, you know, I can't explain. I think this is why
you can explain it by using examples. I mean, look at Steinhoff, for example. I mean, that was our Wirecard. I mean, how did Marcus Uster go to these fancy horse racing events with his stable of ponies and everything, and do so well, and walk around with his glass of champagne and driving a Bentley and et cetera. And it continues to happen. I'm just looking at the FT, FT.com. It says here, Wirecard scandal. Senior partners advised to tell clients objective of fraud was to deceive investors and EY. And that's Ernst & Young, of course, EY. But surely EY, they're in the business of being forensic financial investigators, surely.
Yes. Normally you get a tip-off. They did get tip-offs. They were warned. The German regulators were warned a long time ago that something was wrong. They ignored it. And so there were people who were blowing the whistle, you know, whistleblowers.
Mm.
And they tended to ignore it. That's how you get hints that something's wrong. With Madoff, it was too good to be true.
Yes.
With too good to be true, because you know, I'll give you some hints. With that, it was too good to be true, because he was giving returns that you say, hold on a second, how does he get it? You know, I look at the market every day. I'm not a fool. I've been here. How does he manage to get it right? Where does he get the information? So you're baffled by it. You say something's wrong. The same thing happened to me with EOH. I used to attack EOH all the time.
Yes.
Why? Because every division never did badly. There was never anything wrong. I said, that's too good. Everything was squeaky clean. It, you know, chocolate box type pictures. Everything was, you know, too flowery, too wonderful.
Too perfect. And too delightful.
Too perfect. Hmm. And the same thing with Mark. With Marcus, it was a different thing. You know, I never invested in Steinhoff, because I could never understand the business. Hmm. Every year it changed. You know, every year it changed, and you start to say, no, when I begin to understand what he's doing, I'll do it. Every year there was a different, you know, we sold off this, we bought that. Now we're redoing this, we're changing our year in.
We're buying a mattress company in the United States of America. Exactly. I mean, what is that?
Can you believe it? I actually went around and started to take photographs of the mattress company, of Sleepy's. Yes. And it was nothing more than a room with a few mattresses in. And I promise you, and I used to say,
sounds like my flat.
I promise we would walk into Sleepy. In fact, I've got a Sleepy's mattress. Like, great.
Really?
But I mean, when you
nice
go
and firm
into the shop,
or quite soft? But
lovely. Yeah, no, beautiful. You need a stepladder to get onto the bed.
I like that.
But I mean, it's, yeah. And
well, you're
and
quite short, but I mean,
in Boston, I know. I have to. My wife has to kneel, and I take as a step.
Okay, well, let's keep it clean. Keep it clean, David. Carry on.
But that's, you know, you start to see signs like that, and you say, "Hold on a sec. He couldn't have paid for this. You know, it was nothing more than an empty shop with a few mattresses in. That was it. And some chap sleeping on the mattress, you know, who was running the store.
Do you think he was mentally ill as well, because he just had to keep on buying and
was creating false entries. You know, he was lending money to a company which then pushed it on to someone else and came through as buy as revenue. So he was buying, you know, he was just manipulating the numbers. But that he was able to fox the people around the table, that's the issue. We're the independent directors. You know, why have you got all those rules and regulations if so many companies slip through? And that's where you've got to start to look. When you take on the job as an independent director, you know, you've got to take that seriously. You can't go there for the your quarterly payments and the tea and coffee that they give you and biscuits and parties that they have. You've got to delve, and you've also got to look at the person who's running the business and ask questions about him. I don't think they did it. You know, so I remain very skeptical of the people, you know, who sit on those boards and allow it to happen. And we can discuss that as well forever.
Yes. It's very interesting because corporate social governance responsibility is such a movement at the moment. You don't invest in a company on behalf of your investors if you're an asset management company, because this company sells products that are made by 12-year-old Indonesian children, and they're sewing up
the soccer balls, yeah.
Exactly, soccer balls or tackies or something like that, trainers.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the auditors and the accountants just seem to get away with it. They seem to slip through the net. And when's it going to stop? Because it happens every few months. Something happens every single few months why are these bean counters immune to this? They almost act with impunity.
No, because I don't think they apply themselves properly. I don't think they ask the right questions. Either they're too busy, or alternatively, they don't want to lose the counts. So they tend to let things go, and that's the wrong thing. You know, you can't be mates with your CEO. In other words, you know what I mean? You've got to have that social distance. You've got to practice that, and you've got to be able – you've also got to put your ear to the ground, you know, and say, what do people think? You know, I was asked this question once on TV, and I've extended it, and I think I might have spoken to you before about it. And
yes.
You've got to form a relationship with a company before you buy into it. I'm talking now from investment. You know, when you start to see a lot of hotshot companies emerging, and people say, do you know Shopify? Do you know this one? Do you know that one? I say, I don't know them. And then over years, you learn, you know. And what you do is you follow the director. You follow who's running it. You follow the results. You follow, you know, you start to learn a bit more. It's like a relationship. Like a personal relationship, you know. Yes. You don't go and tick off a box and then say, okay, I'm going to marry you because you filled out these, you filled out the form, you know.
Yeah.
Is your father rich? Yes. Tick, right. You know what I mean? Have you got a degree? Yeah. You know, have you got long legs? Yeah. Okay. You know, it's a lot more to that. And that's why I'm saying you've got to establish a long relationship before you go and buy the company. And you'll learn, you know, you've got to learn who's running it.
And I can give you an example of that, David, and this is a personal observation between you and Mr. Brian Joffe. Over the years, you got to know him, and you realized that he was a very good businessman, and he knew how to build businesses in a responsible way. Not a hot shot that's going to see a share price go up 20% a day, but over the years, he's going to pay dividends, and he's going to do well for his stakeholders and his shareholders. Exactly the example that you've just outlined is you and Mr. Joffe.
When they start manipulating their numbers, restating figures, revaluing assets, then you know you're in trouble. You know, the one thing about Joffe is that you could buy his balance sheet on the street corner. In other words, what it showed you was representative. There was never, if anything, Buffett's like that as well. You know, if anything, it's understated. You know, it's yes, he'll have trouble with certain companies, but overall, the balance sheet represents is a true representation of the business. Mm. And it's very important. That's why you can't get your CFA, you know what I mean, and suddenly you're a nice hot shot and I'm off into a asset management account. It takes a long, long time to learn, you know, to learn the businesses and to learn the ground on which you're operating on, you know, and the people and the players. And that's the difference. You know, that's where experience counts in that. And that's it. You know, I don't know why I was never suckered in. I don't know the Kanafa company about Wirecard, but what happens is there's some managers who put everything in and they went full tilt. Mm-hmm. You know, and have been totally destroyed.
Decimated.
I think we saw decimated, yeah. Decimated. You also got to know it's enough. You know, you've got to know when it's time. And I think we saw that on property, or we've been seeing it on property. You see,
we haven't spoken since Intu went to the wall, yeah. By the way. Let's talk about Intu. How is that possible? This was a 70 Rand share or something. It's gone now. It's finished. It's all over. How does that work?
Well, things change. That's all I can say is things change.
Yeah, but you adapt.
And you knew, you know when the height was coming? You know when I used to joke that every day there was a new property listing. This is it. And exactly. I used to say next week they're going to list the King David School's tuck shops. You know, that's going to be the new listing.
You said that on my show, actually, yes.
I did. And I'm saying that's a warning sign. That's a warning sign of excesses. In other words, what you do is you buy a business, you buy a company, and you inflate the assets, shove it into a REIT and put it onto the institutions, you know, give it to them and they lap it up because they've got so much money that they have to spend. And you know, down the line, these things are going to implode. And it came, you know, it came. There was just too much going into property. It's a difficult area. It's a very, very difficult area. I've seen more property booms and busts in my years than anything else, you know, starting in the 69 boom bust was property. And I've seen it so many times before. And ask Investec, they've gone through really rough times financing property deals, whether it's been in Hillbrow or Berea, you know, chaps who were rich and who geared up in the wrong areas. What the last one was golf courses, yes. You know, golf estates. I mean, so be careful. Be very, very careful.
David.
Areas, you know, I'm saying those are the signs you pick up through experience.
We've spoken a lot and lots to think about. We have to talk about football now, as we always do on a Monday. And I'm sort of starting to get into the football now, because I think the people with the fake sounds and a couple of clubs have got cardboard cutouts, so it looks as though there's a crowd there. I was watching Leeds against somebody, Fulham the other day. Yeah. Leeds versus Fulham. That looked quite cool, and I enjoyed it. And the Spanish do it very well as well. So I'm starting to get back into football. Liverpool have won the league. My goodness me, the outpouring of emotion from Jurgen Klopp really told me how much he loves football. Never mind Liverpool. He just loves what he does. It's an enviable position to be in, to go to work every day and love what you do. Did you not see that?
No, sure. And he's a good man.
He really is.
I don't like Liverpool.
I don't like Germans, but I love him.
Because Liverpool supporters, you know, they haven't done anything for 30 years, but they're making up for it. You know, most other teams, Man United used to be like that to an extent. I've never heard that from Chelsea, or certainly not from Leicester. Leicester had every right to celebrate and that, but no one shoved it in your face. But Liverpool, they shove it in your face. But they deserved it. They're a great, great team.
I can't take
that away. But coming back to the soccer, yeah. They are playing. The chaps are starting to play. One thing I saw Arsenal, when they used to go to Sheffield United, before they walked on the field, they would 2-0 down, you know, because of the abuse that they used to get. And without the crowds, you see what happens. You know, they were able to win. So
they scraped to win. They scored in injury time, or stoppage time, as they call it. They're very lucky to win that game. Yeah. And Sheffield United are on a down cycle at the moment. But, so you're in the semi-finals of the FA Cup. Congratulations.
And who do we draw?
Man City.
We couldn't draw any of the others. We had to draw the top team.
Well, you've got Chelsea.
Normally Barcelona. Yeah. Or Man United.
When is Champions League starting again, by the way?
Is it again? I didn't know it was starting.
I think it must be, next week or something, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it has to, yeah. Anyway.
I thought they'd scrapped it, but anyway.
No, definitely not.
It's
going to go ahead. Anyway, David, we digress.
Yep.
Thank you very much for your time this evening, as always. That's David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was an extended Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.